access number 27797, Mr. Maurice Franklin, reel 4. Now, you decided to come off the landing craft, whichever way around you were, behind a Sherman tank to get some cover. Your gun was fixed to the
So what happened? It was half in the water anyway. It was ridiculous. It was no purpose at all.
So tell us what happened. You were hiding basically behind a tank that was rumbling. What happened exactly.
Right. When we got to the cliffs, was behind...
Hang on, what happened as you crossed the beach?
Well, people were dying left and right. You don't even bother. You just go and hope that you're going to get the other end
now,
where the cliffs
just,
were.
Now, is this just from artillery, or they hadn't opened up with the machine guns yet?
Oh, yes. Everything was being thrown at us from these cliffs at that time, as we were getting on there. And I should think 50% of the men never got to reach the cliff anyway. Really, they didn't. There's dead bodies laying in the sea. There's dead bodies on the beach. There's dead bodies as far as you can see. And all you want to do is to get to the other end and out of the way of the fight if you can. And you just...
Now, you were behind the tank. Were any of your men hit?
No. All our men was all right. We looked after them on that respect. We were like... Because this tank wasn't hit. We thought if the tank would have been hit with one of the shells and blew up, we'd have been up, blown up with the tank as well.
So you crossed... Now,
but
how
we
far,
don't think of that.
How far do you have to go across the beach? How big is it? I mean, roughly. I know it's a long time ago.
Let me see. I should think we had about 250, 300 yards to go.
Quite a way, then.
Yeah, quite a long way.
And that's under first shell fire and then increasingly small arms fire,
yes,
machine guns.
Exactly, yeah.
Were you scared? How did you feel?
I was numb. We were all numb. We never thought about being scared. We knew if we didn't get over there, we wouldn't live. And that's as simple as that. We never gave a thought to it. It's only in retrospect you think, my God, what did I go through there? You know, because if you're there at the moment, you don't realise it at the time. Afterwards, in retrospect, I look back now, and I tell you another incident that happened. Eventually, when we got to the top of this cliff...
You keep jumping ahead. You have to tell the story straight through. You're going across the beach and you're approaching the bottom of the cliff.
That's right.
Now, what happens when you get to the bottom?
I was with the bottom of the cliff. I was then, the tank was there. The tank didn't get up the cliff. The infantrymen from the thing was attacking and charging to climb the top of this cliff, right? Using whatever equipment they had, because they had... all sorts of different equipment I'd never seen, because this was an American army, remember. And we were there in the British army, 10 of us. I don't know how many any other British soldiers were with them on other parts of the... I don't know, because we were just with this group with us, this American army officer and this tank crews and the other tanks and the men. There was a few hundred men in this boat as well, see.
So the American troops were climbing...
I was there with the Americans... And I'm not an infantryman, so we weren't trained in basic training or scaling the heights or fighting hand to hand, because we'd never been involved in that at all. So we were in the middle of these Americans, and we stayed in the middle of them as our protection. And they scrambled up these. Fortunately, I was one. We were fortunate amongst them. They scrambled up to the top of the cliffs, and we got into this gully.
Now, had they already taken the top of the cliffs, or were you...
Not all of it, not completely. No. See, we were fortunate in one respect. Once we got to the top of the cliffs, remember, all the guns on the cliffs could fire only one way, was out to sea. They couldn't turn around and fire this way. They couldn't move the guns around. So we were behind them to their infantry, so we were on a level par with them, virtually. It was them and us. We didn't have people firing at us that we couldn't fire back. And when we got to the top of this cliff, it was a hot summer's day. It was very hot. I remember that. And we were all sweating. I think we were sweating out of fear as well as, to be honest with you, as well as being... It was a hot day with the uniform and respirators and everything else and steel helmets and all that sort of thing.
Did you have any weapons?
Day. Yeah, well, I had a gun. I had a revolver in my holster. I had a 303 rifle, ammunition, fully loaded, and that's what I had. And that's what I was using.
And your men had...
Yeah, and, but the Americans cleared this... The Americans that we were with cleared an area over the top of the cliffs, fortunately. And the Germans had drawn back from that area there, so it was a little respite for us. And it was a hot day. And we got on the top of this cliff, and it was... Thank God we'd got that far, and we thought we'd have a chance. And then It was very strange because there was bodies all round. Not only bodies from the Americans, but also bodies of Germans was laying on top of this cliff. Because they'd been shelled by mortars as well, because they had mortars with them and all sorts of things. I'm talking about hundreds and hundreds of boats was there and people all over the place. And there was a security officer on the boat with me. And when we got on the top there, there was a lot of Germans laying around, and one was laying in a ditch. Now, when you see a mass slaughter like it is, you go numb for a minute, and it's only afterwards that you feel it. But this American said to me, this intelligence officer said, there was a man lying in the ditch, German officer, and he wanted to know, intelligence officer, what troops there were, see whether they were crack divisions or what division they were defending it. So he said to me, go and get his paper out of his pocket. This dead body was laying in this ditch. And when I went over to look at him, he had half his face shot away. And it was the most terrible and horrible mess, because it was a hot summer's day, and I remember there was flies all over him, and it wasn't a pretty sight. And I didn't want to look at him, because, you can imagine, you were thrown into a battle like that. And I knew that the German uniform had a pocket with a button here in which they kept their passes. So I leaned down like that to open his button, to take his documents out, so that the intelligence officer could see which unit he was serving for on the cliffs there, you see. And as I put my hand to feel for his pocket, I remember I put my hand straight into his face that was half blown away. And that finished me for that day. I wasn't really happy. I didn't want nothing to eat anymore that day, I can assure you. That was a terrible, terrible experience. As a first experience of war, what it was really like. We managed to advance a bit into this village eventually.
Do you remember what happened?
I don't even remember the name of the village. Oh, I'll tell you something that happened. Which shook me. When we advanced in the top of these cliffs, the part that we found there, after Germans withdrew this little part, about 6 luxury caravans. Now, I don't know, none of us knew what luxury caravans were doing on the front line of a German unit, and most beautiful. When we opened the doors of these caravans, they were beautifully equipped, most modern caravans, magnificent. I thought the Germans couldn't live in the place. I mean, the soldiers don't live like this. We didn't know what it was for. When we got to the village, into this village, it was deserted. Nobody was there. It was empty. Germans had left. Now, we were going to go, there was a well in this village where we wanted water. But no one was allowed to touch anything because it might have been poisoned by the Germans when they retreated. I remember that. So if you went to get water, you had to have it analysed. There was people there who would do it to see if the water had been contaminated before we were allowed to touch it. And that's when we discovered what these caravans were for. We found out that these were mobile brothels, which the Germans had brought to the front line, and they were using the local French girls as prostitutes in these brothels. And how we knew that was, when we went to this well to get the water, we found out that before the Germans retreated, believe it or not, and I've never seen this with soldiers before, they'd cut the throats of these girls and dumped them in the well. It's only when we went to the well that we found these bodies, these girls' bodies down the well. Then we realised what this was all about. That was the most shocking thing to discover. I couldn't believe it. I mean, they could have let these young girls go. I mean, they're only local girls. I mean, no danger to them whatsoever. There was no purpose in it. I mean, I can't imagine people doing it. That's what it is. And then, it was then that we got immediately called back to England. Because then started the flying bombs. They attacking London with the flying bombs.
When you say immediate, do you mean that day on the 6th of June?
It was about, I think it was the following day. The following day, we were called back to England because they wanted anti-aircraft fire for these V1s and V2s. And I can assure you I wasn't sorry to come out of that hell. And I came back, because the boat's coming back and forth all the time, bringing supplies and all that sort of thing, you see. And we came back and we were fitted out with a new Beaufort's gun. I never had the same crew.
Why not?
I really don't know why. When we came back, they allocated a crew, and we went out, and we went to the East Coast, some days in the East Coast, where we set up these guns.
So still the same battery and everything? But
yeah, still the 305 battery, that's my unit, you see, I'm there for good. 98th Regiment, 305.
Now, whereabouts on the East Coast were you set up?
I don't know, because, you know, I didn't know anything about these villages. I don't even remember the names of them, really. I really don't remember.
In Kent or what?
It was in Kent, definitely. Because the first thing was the V1s. Now, the V1s were a slow-moving, electronically flying bomb. It was a flying bomb, virtually. It was preset before it set off, and it went to a certain place there. The motor cut out, and it crashed, and that was it. But the V1s, they were all right. They were slow-moving, see, and we could shoot them down. And we shot many, many of them down. And the Air Force shot a lot of them down. And although several eventually, because of the amount they fired, some of them got through to London, which did do some damage, which I knew about. Most of them were shot down either by the Air Force or by the anti-aircraft fire. Most of them. Because they were beautiful targets. Because, you see, if a projectile is preset to a course, you can set your attitude because you know exactly where it's going. It's not going to change course. There's no pilot to change course. Not like a plane where it's all over the place. It's one course, one speed all the time. So you can set your equipment and it's accurate all the time. You can't dodge it, if you know what I mean. But then that was superseded then after that by the V1s.
Now, did you have any close... I mean, sometimes they were set to fall just on the coast. Did you have any fall near you?
No. We a few of them crashed into the coast, into the cliffs. You know what I mean? Because it was so low, they were losing height. They were crashing the cliffs.
What would happen when you hit them? Would they blow up? Or?
Oh, yes. Just exploding as a bush. That's it. Nothing. Just debris. That's it.
And so you were doing that from, what, June?
This was in June, yes.
44.
Yeah. And then that was only a few days. It was only a matter of how many days. I don't remember. The time...
It's all right. It's a long time. So you were shooting down V1.
Till the V2 started. Now, it might have been... 2 or 3 weeks we were dealing with these, because the Germans never had planes, because the Battle of Britain, and we defeated virtually the German Air Force before the invasion, so the few planes they had, I think they were using on the fronts anyway, so they didn't have anything to England, so they were relying on rockets only.
Now, what the V2s though, you couldn't shoot at, I presume.
Now the V2s were different. These were rockets, see what I mean, and these flew at a speed that we couldn't cope with. Our equipment just couldn't keep up with it. It was impossible to end. So every one of those, I'm sure, got through. But fortunately for England, let me tell you, the site from which these V2s were launched, you see, was in Peenemünde, which is in Holland. And by that time, the British troops had overrun the site for the V2s, and that's why it was only a limited time they could fire these V2s.
Now, what were you doing? You're still on the East Coast?
I was still on the East Coast, and I had the aircraft. Yeah.
Now, anything happening?
No, because after the V2s, there was nothing happening. There was no. We were just hanging around waiting whether we were going to be sent to France and Germany, back in there again. We didn't know what was going to happen.
How did you feel about that? I mean, you'd had it once.
Well, we were fatalistic by then. You know, when you're in war, you go back and forth, and you expect to be there. You expect to be there. And then I think it was decided that we were anti-aircraft. So there was a big discussion whether they were going to retrain us to field artillery so that we could go over to France and Germany as a field artillery, or whether they were going to leave us. They didn't know what to do with us virtually, see, because we were specialists in this field of anti-aircraft. So they sent us to a camp in South Wales.
Now, when was this, roughly?
This was 1945.
Now, which month?
I can't remember what month.
Now, and you don't know where the camp was?
It was just as the war was ending by then. Germany was about to capitulate, I think, by then.
So April 45.
About, somewhere like that, March, April 45. Now,
so what happened? Whereabouts in South Wales were you?
What was it called? I think it was in a place called Manabir. that was a place where we often used to go before, where we used to do our target practice. They used to tow targets out to sea, and we used to did some training practice of firing out things out to sea, towing it in part of our training, when we used to go on training exercises. And we went into this camp. Now, the war with Germany was over.
No, it wasn't when you got there. Did you start your training? You were retraining as artillery?
There were discussions whether we were going to be.
So nothing.
But I think they realised that because we weren't needed, that they wouldn't go to the top. So we went to this camp. Now, I was then a full sergeant, as you know. So I was entitled to have facilities as a sergeant, you know, because a sergeant don't sleep. And the same. So in the camp where we were at, they were all sergeants in the anti-aircraft. All of us were the same. But we had nothing to do. Because we were sergeants, we don't do any work. We're not privates, we don't do any work. So we were laying around, I never forget, we were laying around, sleeping day, with nothing to do. Nobody bothered us, nobody asked us to do any drill or anything. All we did is every Friday we would go up to the office, salute, get our wages, come away. Another week went by, and we never had anything to do.
This is even while the war was on?
Yeah, the war was just about finishing now. Yes, we had nothing to do.
Now, what about VE Day? What do you remember about that?
Now, actually, VE Day to me was quite a traumatic experience because that was the day my mother died. I never forget that. She died on the day the war ended. And I went to the officer and I said to him, look, my mother has just died, I remember, and I must go. Is it possible, the war, I'm not needed here. Can I have a bit of leave for the funeral? Which he gave me leave. It was in Ilford. My mother died in Ilford. She lived in Ilford then. And I went to my mother's funeral there. And then I came straight back to the camp. You know, and it was a different atmosphere entirely. There wasn't all the jubilation celebration. Although we were happy to hear the end of the war, and actually then we survived the end of the war, for God's sake. That was it. But we were hearing about these terrible stories that came out. Because remember, I know because I was talking to many soldiers, many of my friends that was there as well, we only arrived so far into Eastern Europe. Then we were met by the Russians. So most of Eastern Europe was liberated by the Russians, you see. The Russians got to Berlin first, they got to Warsaw first, they got to all the camps. So that's where all the army camps, see, by then we knew all about these concentration camps. The Russians liberated most of the extermination camps, like Dachau, Auschwitz, Bergen-Belsen. These were extermination, built particularly for the extermination of people, because the Warsaw Declaration came out of Wannsee. Hitler said they want a solution to the Jewish problem when he was up marching through Russia, and had millions of Jewish people, and he wanted to exterminate them, because unlike before in Germany or Poland, he had hundreds of thousands. Now we're talking about millions of people. And what can you do with millions of people? So the Wannsee Conference sat down, which is a little town outside Berlin called Wannsee. It's a historical fact. It was chaired by Adolf Eichmann. And the one item on the agenda of the Wannsee Conference was a solution to the Jewish problem. Now, they were clever people. They're not fools by any means. And they had read history. And they knew through history that every country in Europe at some time or other, from the 17th, 18th century, had tried to exterminate the Jews of their country. The first country ever to to expel the Jews from their country was Great Britain, England. It was followed by Spain during the Spanish Inquisition, followed by Portugal, followed by every country had tried to expel them. And they knew they'd failed because they're still here. No. So they decided there's only one way, once and for all, in which to solve the Jewish problem was that every man, woman and child of Jewish faith has to be eliminated. That is the only way, that would be the final solution, and the conference was called the Conference for the Final Solution. And that's where they started building in 1944 all these extermination camps. Not the concentration camps, although millions died in the concentration camps through starvation and disease and that sort of thing. They weren't extermination camps. Bergen-Belsen, Auschwitz, and these were extermination camps. There they built the gas chambers. There they built the incinerators. There they built all the things that we know about now because we've seen them. These were purposely built for the purposes of carrying out the recommendation of the Wannsee Conference. Now, the Russians liberated them first, and they were shocked, of course, when they walked in there, so they couldn't believe what they saw because no one believed what was going on. Although people did know, and we know from now because certain papers have come out of the archives that the Pope was informed about these things. Winston Churchill was informed about these camps to tell them that they were there. So all the documents are there to show that they were notified about them. They knew all about them, and such many of my friends did get to the extermination camps. In fact, one of my friends who was in another regiment, I was with him only a few weeks ago, he's there. He went to Belsen, Bergen-Belsen, and he married one of the inmates of that camp in Bergen-Belsen, believe it or not.
Now, when did you find out what had happened to your own family that were out there in Romania? Because, I mean,
we could find nothing about them until many years later, after the State of Israel were formed. They have an archive in Israel of all the Jews of Europe, and they're all on computers. And we went to this archive and we gave all the details, and we found out about our family, uncles, aunts, cousins, all except two young girl cousins. The only two young girls that survived the war. All the rest were exterminated at Auschwitz. They were taken to Auschwitz from Romania.
You didn't find out about this for many years afterwards, obviously.
Quite a few years after the war, because it wasn't until 1948 that Israel was formed, and I didn't go there till about 1950 anyway. But I'd found out the story because these two of my cousins who escaped, or not escaped, they were liberated from Auschwitz. They were still alive. After the war, they had nowhere to go. They couldn't go back to Romania. They were refugees. But they knew my father had a brother who lived in America.
See?
And they wanted to go to America because they knew they had an uncle in America. They knew about my father, but didn't know where he lived in England. But they knew they had another uncle, their father's brother, who lived in America, and he lived in Cleveland, Ohio, and that's all they knew about him, no address. And one of them was taken to a displacement persons camp in Italy, where she met another refugee from the camp, a Polish man, and she married this Polish man in Italy, and both of them eventually made their way to America and found a family in Cleveland, and they're still there to this day. The other one was in another displaced persons camp, separate from her sister, and she eventually made her way to Israel, where she's still living in Israel now with her family. That's going back all them years.
Now,
she made her way to Israel and she's there. So one of them is in Israel and one's in America. Now, I've seen them both since then.
What about you, though? I mean, after VE Day, you get a bit of leave because your mother dies.
Right.
It's traumatic.
I go back to the camp and I'm laying there. The war is over. I could see fully well there's nothing for me. Now, I must tell you this, before I went to Germany, this is interesting. Before the invasion took place, I understood that our unit was going to be sent to the Far East. Right. I get called into the CO's office one morning, and he said to me, I see here, according to the records, that you, father and mother, were originally born in Romania. I said, that's correct. But they were naturalised British because my father served in the 1418 war and he was naturalised British subject. So he's British. He said to me, well, that doesn't matter. According to the German nationality laws, we have a problem with you. Because should you be taken prisoner, he said to me, you would not be subject to the Geneva Convention. You would be shot as a traitor. Because Romania is an ally of the Germans. So if you were caught and it was found out that you were of Romanian descent, you would be liable to summarily being shot. So we've got a problem with you going in the Far East in case you're captured. So I said, well, I can't do anything about that. What do you do about it? You know what I mean? These are the facts. For some unknown reason, they sent me. We were back in Yeovil, and this was a big army camp there, and he sent me...
Hang on, you left the camp in South Wales?
That's right. This was before the camp in South Wales, I must remember this, before the invasion even in Germany. They were going to send us to the Far East. And we came up on the notice board, because we had orders come out every day, like I showed you that order thing. I was to report to a photographer in Yeovil. Now, I didn't know what for. I went to him, and he said, well, I don't know anything about it. I said, well, the army wants you to take my picture. So he said, how do you want, head and shoulders or full length? I said, I don't know. No, but didn't they tell you? He said, no, they didn't tell me anything. So he took a full length picture. I went back to the camp. They said, that's no good. They want head and shoulders. They took a head and shoulders, and I was the only one. I don't know what difference it made, but I'm the only member, I know for a fact, the British Army, who has their photograph stamped, here it is, and put into their army playbook. And that's the picture they took of me in Yeovil.
I could, you show me, and it's just stuck on there.
They stick it on there, they've got the stamp here, at the bottom. Don't know what it says there. And they stuck it on there. And I don't know why it makes the slightest difference. And I never went to the Far East. The rest of the group went to the Far East, and I formed another group of people for the judging, and I was left behind for that very reason. And yet I went on the invasion where the Germans were, but they wouldn't go to the Far East, which was quite as typical British Army system. But that was it. But there you are. It's amazing.
And that's your picture there, and your paper to this yeah. day, yeah. Now, going back to
when I had hair there, you see. Didn't we all?
Now, going back to after VE Day, what were you doing then?
I was in this camp in South Wales.
And how long did that go?
Well, I was there for about a month, 6 weeks. My mother died, and I was lying there, and I thought, the war is over, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not doing nothing in the Far East, I could see. The war in Japan was still going on. I thought, I could do more good at home than I can here. At least I could do something. I mean, I'm here doing nothing. So I said to the officer in charge, when I got my pay this one Friday, I said, excuse me, I said, is it possible for me to have 7 days leave? I'm sitting here, I'm not doing anything for 7 days, you know what I mean? I might as well be home. So I said, all right. So they gave me a pass for 7 days. I went home for 7 days. After 7 days, I went back, because he gave me a train pass, a free train travel for 7 days. You only get so many of those allowed. The rest of them, if you want to leave, you've got to pay for yourself. So I went back and I went to my wife and I had 7 days with my wife. And I said, right, I went back to the camp, and about a week there, and then went back and said, look, can I have another 7 days? He said, well, that's all right. He didn't care, because nothing to do anyway. He gave me another 7 days, and this went on for day after day after day.